In some translations, this text is titled The Blessing of Abram, or The Blessing of Abram and Sarah. Because this story is really, I think, about two things. It is about the hospitality that Abram offers these strangers who show up, and it is also about this blessing that God grants to Abraham. But there's a lot of mystery in how those things are connected and in what those things even mean. Let's talk about this practice of hospitality that Abram offers. The story begins with these strangers coming to Abram. And the sense of these strangers, as Keith intimated in his words of welcome, is a strange and mysterious thing. Because the verse begins by saying the Lord appeared to Abram. And then it goes on to say, he looked up and suddenly saw three men standing near him. And these three men are never identified, but they do seem to be strangers to Abram. And because it is associated with this phrase about the Lord appearing to him, some traditions hold that it was two angels and one somehow physical manifestation of Yahweh. Other traditions suggest that it was simply three people, but that because they were able to communicate this message that they had perhaps been encouraged to share by God, it was through them that Abram saw God. And so, therefore, it was through them that he saw the Lord and acted accordingly. In any case, whatever happened, it may not be as important about who these strangers were. I think the Bible intentionally leaves that a bit vague. But maybe what is more important is how Abram reacted when he saw them. It is as though he treated them, as though he was greeting the Lord, God, or at the very least, angels sent by God. Now, there's a monastic order named for Saint Benedict called the Benedictines, and in this order, one of the basic characteristics are this idea that comes from the rule of Saint Benedict, which was written, that says we are to greet everyone who comes to us as though they are Jesus. And that rule is still practiced today. It is a rule of hospitality. It's what Benedictines are especially known for. And this idea, this practice of hospitality creates a whole community ethos. Think about how that would transform our world if we all greeted one another as if we were greeting Jesus, no matter who stood before us. It's an amazing thing, and we as Americans have much to learn from much of the rest of the world who is much better at this practice of hospitality. In fact, some would argue that Abram was simply acting as many people in that Middle Eastern culture did, in some cases still do today, with this sort of lavish hospitality. And on top of that, in his time, when strangers came through, there was a decent chance that they might be traitors. And they would bring goods that you might otherwise not have access to, or you might be able to sell some of your goods to them. And so hospitality was an important part. Welcoming was simply a way of doing commerce. But I think this story goes far beyond that for a couple of reasons. One is that it begins with this statement about the Lord appearing. And there is this mystical quality that surrounds it. It is given a sacred place in this story of the promise of Isaac, the child who will be born to them. It's also important to notice that what Abram does really goes beyond the regular forms of hospitality. It is more extraordinary. And the story takes several verses to describe exactly what all he does. He goes to Sarah, and he has her do this, and then he gets this calf, and he does all these things, and it talks about that in great detail, highlighting its significance. And I could say more about that in the context of the larger Genesis narrative that's going on here. Hospitality seems to be highly important, and Abram's actions are important in this story. They become part of how he blesses and becomes a blessing, which is the promise for Abram in the covenant formed by God. But soon after he makes these preparations, the scene switches to Sarah. She is listening in the tent. I imagine if this was a movie, in the movie version, we'd now switch the visual, and we see Sarah listening. She's listening to the men as they are talking, and they're talking about the fact that she, Sarah, an old woman, will bear a child, and she laughs. You can imagine the visual on her face. But it's probably not a happy laughter. I mean, it's a ridiculous promise. It's a ridiculous prediction. There is no reason to believe that this will really happen. So it's likely more of a bitter, yeah, right, kind of laughter. Something she's not proud of, because when the men say she laughed, she says, no, I didn't laugh. She doesn't want to be that vulnerable. She doesn't want to share what her feelings upon hearing this might actually be. And yet, by identifying, yes, we're going to call it what it is, you did laugh, we know that what is revealed is that God knows our doubts, our fears, our cynicism, our bitterness. None of this can be hidden from God. We also learn here that nothing is impossible for God. The question that the text raises. Now, this promise of a son has happened actually previously. There is several chapters back, and it's several chapters, it's chapter 21, until Isaac is actually born. And at that point, Sarah's laughter turns to a joyful laughter. I imagine the shot being a similar shot, only this time we see a whole different kind of face laughing. And Isaac's name is a name that is derived from the word laughter. Sarah's not punished for her doubts, for her feelings. No, her laughter is simply redeemed into something joyous, blessed. But in the meantime, between these original blessings pronounced by God, this original promise, and this time when Isaac is born, a lot happens to Abram and Sarah. A lot happens to their family and those with them, and there are struggles. There's deep pain. There is rejection. There's a whole series of things. This is a story that goes on for several chapters, and before the joy comes a lot of hard things for them. The blessing that comes from this hospitality, or that seems somehow related to it, is as mysterious as the strangers themselves. In her book, Hospitality, The Heart of Spiritual Direction, author Leslie A. Hay speaks of something that she calls numinous reciprocity. And this term, as she describes it, is the idea that when we live a hospitable lifestyle, when we practice hospitality in all we do, in the way we live, there can be this mysterious, numinous, sacred, divine sense of receiving something back, reciprocity. It describes the sort of encounter between Abraham and Sarah and these strangers whom they welcome. Now, it's clearly not a cause and effect transactional sort of thing. The blessings that come are not blessings that can be necessarily predicted. They do not come on a tit-for-tat basis. And yet, those who live lives of hospitality often can recount the story of blessings, unexpected joys that have come from that. I know I can. My mother's favorite Bible verse was from Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Mother loved that verse. The CEB translates it in a very practical way. Don't neglect to open your homes to guests, because by doing this, some have been hosts to angels without knowing it. My parents demonstrated this in so many ways. There are many, many stories I could tell. And so this was a formative verse in my family and for me. But perhaps the greatest story was when my brother's very short-lived college roommate ended up needing a place to stay when he dropped out of college. There was sort of no immediate path for him, and so he moved into our basement where he lived for the next 2 years and became a big brother to me in so many ways. And there's so many stories of blessings that came out of that relationship. But what I'll say for today is it was interesting. When I had two young daughters of my own, about the ages that my sister closest to me and I were, when he came to live with us, I asked my mother, I said, were you ever afraid to welcome in this young man when you had these two, who was a relative stranger to you, when you had these two young girls in your home? And she said, and then have him live there for 2 years. And she said, well, I didn't know that's what I was doing. I thought I was just giving him a place to stay for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and then it was a couple of years. So that's what happened. And who would have known that among the many blessings, when my mother was in a nursing home after my father had died and many of us children had moved away and were off doing our own things, he would be the one who farmed her land and took care of it for her. It was not a blessing she ever thought about or even knew she desired when she welcomed him, she and my father. And they welcomed so many others, and there are so many stories. But there was something that happened. And this story doesn't say for us what will happen for us. It doesn't mean that this kind of a blessing means money or safety or being kept from danger. In fact, there's plenty of danger and not safety for Abram and Sarah in their life. It doesn't even mean that for any of us, just because Sarah was given a child, that's what the blessing looks like in our lives. No, it is not ours to determine how God will bless us. But even the social scientists of our day can tell you that research shows that lives that give to others, that serve others in, beyond ourselves and our family and friends, our lives prove that people rate themselves as happier than those who don't, that It even has health benefits and people live longer. There are many blessings that come from the practice of hospitality, and it has many implications for us. One author puts it this way: Christian hospitality is a spiritual discipline that is too often overlooked or undervalued in individual and communal life. It needs to be integrated into our daily practice. It is an act of spiritual significance that invites us to embody God's grace and mercy in our interactions with others. Hospitality, in this sense, is not merely offering comfort. It is about cultivating a spirituality that draws us out of isolation and into the embrace of community. The spiritual practice of hospitality is especially critical in an era marked by widespread loneliness, isolation, and the fragmentation of community. As we grapple with issues such as immigration, racial injustice, and economic disparity, the act of welcoming the stranger takes on profound moral and spiritual significance. In a world where political and social divisions are so deeply entrenched, the act of breaking bread together offers a glimpse of what is possible. A community where enemies become friends and strangers become family. Hospitality, in the way, has the power to transform not only individual lives, but also the fabric of society. The act of hospitality is not passive. It is a form of active resistance against a culture of isolation and division. By sharing our tables, homes, and lives with others, we participate in God's redemptive work in the world. A bold statement, indeed. I struggled this week in writing a sermon about hospitality, thinking about what is the message for us here at Lombard Mennonite Church. On the one hand, welcoming the stranger seems to have such obvious context in this political climate where our immigrant brothers and sisters are struggling. I read the words of my friend Sandra Martinez, who wrote in a blog for Western District Conference, where she serves as associate conference minister. She wrote about her experience accompanying a friend of hers to an ICE hearing. And she said, in today's world, we are again called to witness, especially in the face of immigration systems and war that dehumanizes and traumatizes. We cannot be neutral to systems that oppress. Accompaniment is not only an act of friendship, it is an act of faith. It is how we say, you are not invisible, you are not alone. God sees you, and I see you too. As Anabaptist churches and leaders, this is the moment to embody the gospel in concrete ways, not with grand gestures, but with presence, with hospitality, with advocacy, with courage. I thought of Sandra and others and wondered, is my call in preaching today to say that this story of welcoming the strangers invites us into greater advocacy, presence, and relationship with the strangers among us who are especially vulnerable right now? But then I remembered, as was spoken in my previous quote, this is also a time of isolation and loneliness. There's an epidemic of loneliness, and you don't have to be a stranger in a land to feel like a stranger within a community. There may be people sitting in these pews who feel that loneliness and isolation and strangers, and perhaps the call here is to reach out to those around us in our church, in our neighborhood here in Lombard, around the church, in our own neighborhoods where we live, within our families, to all those who feel the need for welcome and a hospitable hand in offering. And then I wondered, perhaps the call to us is instead a sermon that invites us to recognize that we too need to receive, not just offer, hospitality. We need to humble ourselves and to open ourselves to God's hospitable welcome to us, because it is only through that that we can truly offer heartfelt hospitality, not out of obligation, but as a spiritual practice that says, God, let me join in your welcome, please. It would be my great honor. Perhaps we need to learn to receive from those around us. Which sermon should I write? I wondered. And I never did figure that out. You tell me.